Hello, Seb.
Hello, Paul.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Most recently, so we haven't talked in a little bit, but we did recently do our live stream, right? Of the, or what do you call it? Was it a live stream, I guess? Yeah.
A webcast, more or less. We covered a webcast from SpaceX and other launches.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there was more than zero people in there at one point. So I think it went...
Yeah. I think we had like 20 viewers at some point on the first stream. I don't know. The second stream, we had like 10-something-ish.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys do that? So I have not heard anything about that. How did that go?
Yeah, we did. We had a double cast. It went actually pretty good. We didn't have the webcams up in time. So like it was just us talking about the launch without our facial impressions and stuff. But it was fine.
Yeah. I mean, like I don't know. I don't know if people are interested in rewatching a launch, but live is tricky. And so it almost would be nice to put it up later. But yeah, live is also really nice. So
I think you can download those launches now. You can link the most recent one is saved on Twitch. So you can link it up like in the podcast description.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. But so out of those launches, we got some success, right? I know I didn't actually see this most recent launch, right? But it was foggy or something. Walk me through this real quick.
It was very, very foggy. Like before the launch, you could see like the legs of the Falcon just sitting on the pad. Like you knew that that was a rocket. Like you saw the black legs, but other than that, they just showed the onboard camera of the Falcon on liftoff, and the launch, the landing was pretty dark. But the launch went fine. All satellites are up and healthy, and Iridium has contact to all of them.
Beautiful. They were both Iridium launches then?
No, the one was the SpaceX launch, and the other one was an Ariane 5 launch that launched 4 GPS satellites.
Okay.
That went fine also.
Cool. Yeah, and then the one previous that I was a part of was also an Iridium launch. So lots of Iridium.
No, the recent one was the Telstar 19V.
Oh, okay. My bad. Cool. Then we got some diversity amongst our satellites. And yeah, just from the last one, it was just smashing success, beautiful landing. And have you ever like checked out the CEO of Iridium on Twitter? He's a cool guy.
Yeah. He's like as cool as Elon, but Elon's cooler.
Yeah, I love him. He's like he'll just jump on there and tweet. And he's kind of like a little bit provocative at times and kind of fun. And you know who else is really fun, yeah, though? Is it Tory Bruno? Is that his name?
Yeah.
He for being the leader of what I consider like a very not innovative rocket company, right? Like they seem like the boring ones in town. He's really fun on Twitter.
Yeah. He answered to me a couple of times already.
What did you ask him?
That basically was ITAR related, so.
Oh, so he was just like...
I said that I could basically never work for either SpaceX nor ULA because of ITAR. Shit, I hate ITAR.
That really does suck. Let's talk about that for just a second. So you do want to work for... I mean, like, you don't want to work for Tesla. You want to work specifically for a rocket company?
Yeah.
Mm. And I mean, so there are, you know, options that are not US-based, of course, but...
Who is as cool and lands their freaking first stages on the barge out in the ocean?
That's true. So there's Rocket Lab, right? And they are U.S. like based, but they also have this weird thing with New Zealand, and I don't know if that would be possible.
Yeah, they have their launch site in New Zealand, but everything is developed in the U.S., so I think you also need ITAR clarification for that.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Have you looked into like how hard that is to get? Do you basically have to have citizenship?
Citizenship or legal residency, so green card.
Mm. Okay, well, it's not... completely.
That's not too difficult, but yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Huh. Yeah, I remember if you watched the Q&A for IAC, International Astronomical Congress 2016, where Elon first talked about the ITS rocket.
Yeah, that where he got asked those weird questions about the how they are planning to recycle the poop on Mars.
It was so bad, like almost like down in infamy as some of the like worst Q&A, completely unfiltered. Oh man, I don't know. I really want to go to one of these one time, but I think it was 2016 where someone asked.
Yeah,
it was a woman, and she wanted to know why he was. She said like, "Oh, you're doing great things," or something like that, but you're not very diverse because you like only have U.S. employees or whatever. And you know, Elon was pretty quick to just say, oh, that's not something that he can do anything about because of just ITAR regulations. So
yeah.
Anyway, what do we have going on? What did you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk about that SpaceX finally has the clarification to land their first stages over at Vandenberg. So previously, SpaceX has had a landing pad at Vandenberg for a long time. It's basically right next to the launch pad. Like, I think it's like 250-ish meters. And they were not allowed to land there because apparently there is like seals. So the thing is, yeah, I think it's seals that live very close to that landing pad. And if the rocket decides to explode, it would spray propellants all over and basically wreck those seals. So that's why, and fire, of course. So that's why they weren't allowed to land. And since they have had enough landings recently where they show that the stage can land fine and doesn't explode, they were given permission to finally land. And the first rocket to land at Vandenberg will be the, it's the, I think, the Saucom / ETA set one. That should be the first one to go to land in Vandenberg.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah.
So my question right off the bat here is, how are the seals not endangered by the launch of the rocket in the first place? Just because it's farther?
I have no idea. That's what like the whole SpaceX community is trying to figure out right now, but no one knows, so.
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, I don't know enough about this.
The biggest risk is probably the fire risk, but if the rocket explodes on the pad, there is a fire, and if it explodes on the landing pad, there is a fire, so.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like maybe this is, I don't know, someone didn't want them to launch there, and they're like, oh, the seals, you gotta... I don't know. It almost sounds like an excuse.
Yeah.
I'm sure it has legitimate reasons and things, but like for it to take this long and everything, I don't know. But I'm glad they have their clearance to land, so it'll be exciting to see that.
It will.
Do you think that is this harder to do? Do you think?
Yes, it is. It requires more Delta V. As it's not particularly harder because they have the landing procedure down to a T, but the rocket has to do a lot more work to get back from doing the mission, because like you don't have the Earth rotating under, you have the Earth basically rotating away from you. So
I see. Could you imagine the PR disaster if they do fail to land and like all these seals somehow get injured and
oh god, that would be horrible.
Like, I can just see the headlines now, and they're not great.
Also, the thing was probably with those seals, like, the sound from the incoming boosts or with the triple sonic booms, that's also pretty loud.
Yeah, these poor seals. I mean, I don't know. They're going to be like, you know, the rocket cows of McGregor? We've got rocket seals now. But I don't know how those cows feel. I feel like they'd be bothered.
They are actually SpaceX cows.
Oh, yeah?
SpaceX owns those cows. They actually grow cattle and everything around the pad, so...
Oh, my gosh. They should make, like, SpaceX brand milk or something. I wouldn't put it past them either.
That would be quite impressive. Like, if you could order that over the SpaceX store, I'd totally do that.
Yeah. I was actually just recently... So I was thinking, like, man, I wish I could donate money to SpaceX just to help further their cause. And they're like not a public company, so I can't really invest in them. And I was just thinking about how can I best put money into this company? And of course, I can like tweet and
throw it at Tesla.
Tesla?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like Elon always says that Tesla and SpaceX are separate companies, but I'm sure that he does actually transfer money over his personal account between the both of them. I mean, neither of them are really profitable right now, but I think there's some money transfer going on between those companies, so.
Yeah, that's true. And I wonder, that's probably a pretty good way, like if you just were to invest in Tesla. The other thing I thought was, oh, well, Google owns a stake, so maybe just getting Alphabet stock or Google stock. I don't know if that really transfers to like helping SpaceX, but the third option that is kind of fun is I was thinking, well, I'll just buy things from the SpaceX store, and then I will sell them.
That would be the easiest thing.
For less money.
For the quality that the SpaceX stuff has, it's actually pretty cheap.
Yeah. I mean, it is cool stuff. I like their little, the model rocket that they have, and Didn't they just add something too?
I'm checking right now.
Oh no, Tesla. That's a thing we can talk about. Tesla added a surfboard. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, it's really cool. So as I understand it from some discussion on Reddit, I think they partnered with an existing surfboard company. It's not something that they didn't design the board, right? But they took an existing board and they branded it with Tesla in a really cool way. Like, it looks good. So it's technically now the cheapest way to own a Tesla aside from the little kid car, you know?
You can buy a 1 to 18 scale Tesla Model S P100D model car for $250.
Oh, yeah, there. I stand corrected. I mean, the board is, I think it was $1,000 or $2,000. I don't remember. $2,000, I think. Which is kind of a lot, and I don't know. It's probably not too bad for like how decent quality that board is, but it's also only limited to like a run of 200 boards.
I want the desktop supercharger. That thing's awesome.
Oh, the little phone charger.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
So cute.
They had a lot of fun with, well, they've had fun with the traditional merch, and then of course you've got the tequila, if that ever happens, and the flamethrowers, and I guess there was mention of like candy, right? They were going to make a candy.
The candy company.
Yeah, so we'll see if any of that materializes, but I appreciate the novelty. Anyway, let's talk really quickly about, so over, I think probably about a week ago now, the Hyperloop competition happened. So every summer, Hyperloop, this is confusing, right? So if you're not aware, SpaceX sponsors a Hyperloop competition. They don't directly develop Hyperloop or anything like that, but outside of their headquarters, like literally on the street across from them, they have a mile-long tube that they've built, and it's a test track for like half-scale or third-scale Hyperloop pods. And so every summer, mostly college teams, I think Reddit had a team, I'm not sure if they're still going, but college teams build a pod, and the competition, there were a lot of variables at first, but I think largely right now it's about just going as fast as possible.
I think it is, yeah.
So that just happened here last week. And it's, you know, they don't really live stream it because it's not the most exciting thing. There's a lot of delay in...
They did live stream it last year, I think.
Oh, okay. The runs and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, I don't know if they did this year or not, but there's not a lot to see aside from when things go down the tube, and it kind of all looks the same when they go down the tube. So we don't really end up getting very much like news out of this, but I have pulled up the relevant tweets here. And so from the @Hyperloop account, we've got congratulations to War Hyperloop. That's WARR.
Those are the Germans.
Yeah.
We won. Yes.
The Europeans kick butt in this competition. We'll talk about that in a second. But so War Hyperloop won 2008 Hyperloop pod competition at peak top speed of 290 miles per hour.
That's ridiculous.
Just to give a little perspective on that. So like I said here, Europe kicks butt. I don't know exactly why, but they've done very well in these competitions. So I was a part of the first Hyperloop competition through Purdue University, and I was just there on site. And the two, War did pretty well in that first one, but the people that kicked butt were Delft in the Netherlands. Have you heard of them?
I think I did, maybe. I don't know.
So just to give them a little bit of a shout out here, because on the Hyperloop Reddit and then on YouTube, they have a video that unveils their most recent pod.
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually really badass. Oh, here it is. I found it. So it's called Pod Reveal, just Delft Hyperloop Pod Reveal. And they have a Chinook helicopter. Like, I think they actually somehow got a Chinook helicopter. And it's like a really dramatic video, and they unveil their like gorgeous looking pod. And it's really well, like the design aspects and the logo is really just beautiful. So shout out to Delft on that one. Although I will say, like, as I understand it, I think Delft as a team, like some of them I'm pretty sure are even paid, and like they take a semester off of university, and it's like basically a company. So it a little bit makes sense, but they still, like, it doesn't even matter because they do so well.
Question, what system do they run? Do they run wheels or do they run magnetics? Or
that is a good question. Okay, so for the first Hyperloop competition, there was a big debate on, because Hyperloop Alpha had the air bearings, right? And then for the first Hyperloop competition, almost everyone worked out that air bearings weren't really going to fly very well. I think one team used air bearings, and everyone had magnetic levitation skis that used Hallback arrays. Hallback arrays, basically, they have magnets oriented in a certain way that generates a magnetic field only in one direction. And so what happens is when you run the skis over the aluminum track that's in the Hyperloop tube, you get a little bit of levitation. And it also creates drag, so it's like, I don't know, almost a little bit defeats the purpose of floating. But a lot of people use that, and as I'm pretty sure that Delft and most of the teams that have won are still using that. Some of them just use wheels, though. And Elon has been a big proponent, of just wheels can work at up to a certain speed.
What actually uses wheels?
Oh, do they? Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. And it's also, so I think after the first or second competition, they made it, so you could propel yourself, or you could use SpaceX's little pusher pod, which also looks really good. It's basically a modified Tesla chassis, and it'll push you up to speed, right? But some of the teams, you get like a lot of points, and you look great if you propel your own pod. And it's really hard to propel your own pod without wheels. Like, what are you going to do? So I think that's why probably War has wheels. And
War are using like that super fan system thingy. They have basically a huge turbine on the back of their thing that propels them.
Yeah, I know one team, I'm a little fuzzy on the details now, but somebody definitely was using a compressor, which again is present in the original Hyperloop Alpha, and kind of like core to the concept. So it's good to see that somebody's developing that, but it's really hard to make that as a college team. Basically, that's about all that we got out of that, is that our new top speed to beat is 290. I think it was a fun time. I wish they would open it to the public, because I'd really like to go again. Anything else going on?
We have the Mariah Petit launch in 3 days and 11 hours, specifically on August 4th at 1:16 Eastern, if I calculated that right. Should be, yeah, 1:16 Eastern on 1:19 Eastern on 4th of August 2018.
We'll have to cover that one. That's a good time to cover, too, so.
Also, the surfboard is already sold out.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering. So it went up, I think, I don't remember, like 2 or 3 or 4 days ago, maybe?
Yeah.
So that was pretty quick. I mean, 200 isn't really a whole lot, so. I'm a little bit surprised it's even limited edition. Like, what was the point of taking the time to do that?
Publicity.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't know. They could make it at least a little less limited.
I mean, look at the flamethrower. How many flamethrowers are there?
How many flamethrowers were there? What was the total number?
500-something-ish.
You okay? Because what, there were 10,000 hats?
Yeah, 10,000 hats and 500 flamethrowers.
Was it just 500?
I mean, it's not a flamethrower anymore. Like, it's
yeah,
the boring company, not a flamethrower.
Uh-huh.
20,000 were there, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't just 500. But yeah, cool. Cool limited stuff. I really want that surfboard, even though I don't have a Tesla or surf, or live near an ocean, for that matter. I hope the people that got one enjoy it.
I hope so, too.
We'll leave it at that. Seb, it has been great talking with you.
It's been great talking to you, too.